We also have, okay. The Right Honorable Controller is here with us today and other members. And so if you'll let in Carl and Erica, and they can introduce themselves, and they're going to give us a statement of their recent audits and findings. Amber?
Okay, Erica.
And you know what? What? But what we'll do? Just one second. We do have a quorum. Somebody moved to accept the minutes of the last meeting as presented.
So moved. Second.
Second. All in favor? Carried. Okay. You're on, folks.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you all. Again, I'm Carl Widmer, partner Drescher Malecki, and also on the call with me today is Erica Hanley. She is the senior manager on the job, and she's, we're both familiar faces to Ulster County on the audit side. So meeting, we're at the conclusion of the audit this year for the fiscal year ended December 31st, 2020. And we wanted to get the group together prior to the issuance of the financial statements to convey the results and our overall observations. So I think last year we did have a pretty good format, and it facilitated a good conversation where gave a brief introduction, but then we brought up that slideshow, which helped cover the key areas of the audit, the required communications, and then a little bit of the focus just on the general fund, like at a high level. And we included those, and that was distributed prior to the meeting too, the presentation slides. Again, we included some of the peer comparison slides where we pull information off the comptroller's website where everyone submits their annual financial reports. And then after the presentation, we could cover the observations, management letter. That was also a key item that we worked this year. Let my team know, hey, we want to get this together sooner than later, and worked with, Amber really helped a lot to facilitate getting a final draft with up-to-date responses and information in there ready for today's meeting so that we didn't have to have a second meeting after September 30th like we did last year. So we got it all in for today's meeting. Where we sit today, testing, that's complete. We are finalizing, our work papers. We go through a couple rounds of review. So that is still being finalized, but we don't anticipate it, affecting the financial reports or letters. The draft of the main financial statement, which is the comprehensive annual financial report. And just an FYI to the group, we were informed by the GFOA, the Government Finance Officers Association, they administer the program for this type of financial report. And it was informed of everybody participating that the acronym of CAFR, just for everyone here, it was casually called the CAFR previously. That is unacceptable language, as it has been recognized as a negative term in some groups. So I will do my best to break the habit and not use it. I'll try to say the annual report. I figured I'd give the group the update for why I'm trying to do that. But the draft of the annual report and the management letter was circulated prior to today. I know it wasn't too much in advance, but working with a part-time individual in finance now with CJ, who's the primary author of the document that we work with. So we are working to get it out by the deadline. We got those two documents out to the group so we can discuss it today. And then our plan is actually to have drafts of all reports and letters hopefully sent out just so you get a look at them by the end of the day tomorrow. That's an internal goal. It carries a due date, per our contract of September 30th. We anticipate meeting that deadline, but we'd like to circulate drafts before the weekend to give everybody at least a couple of days to take a look at it if you wanted to prior to this. And then before we get into the presentation, one item to follow up on from our May meeting, the entrance meeting, was that I thought, and Amber, if you want to chime in, that it was a pretty productive effort in reaching out to both mental health and social services regarding the submission of that cost report, the CFR cost reports. And I know there was some concern for the tardiness of when it's completed, but I thought it did facilitate a good conversation. Both departments, you know, they didn't really back down. They provided their responses for why it is the way it is. And to report today, mental health was submitted on time by June 1st. And we are currently a work in process with social services. We've sent out our requests for the detailed testing, and we're hoping as long as they're able to gather the support in the good time, we'll finish that up by September 30th, which has been a tough task to carry through in the past year. So it was worth bringing up. I think they did recognize that there was some room for improvement, and we saw a better response time. So I will go ahead and share the screen. Did anybody have any comments or questions just before we get started on the slideshow, just to bring up to the group?
Go ahead.
All right. Can I share? There we go. Oh, it still says disabled. Amber, are you able to change that or?
Let me see what I can do.
If she isn't able to, is the group here able?
I have it pulled up on my screen and I could do it.
That'd be fine, okay. If that's easier. Excellent. All right, so we can move on right to the next slide. Is everybody seeing that?
Yep.
Excellent. Thank you. So first off to cover, it looks like everybody on the call, these are familiar faces. So you've been through this before, but just to recap the deliverables, what you can count on at the end of our engagement each year. The financial statements, of course, that's going to have our opinion. That's the main report that everybody's looking to for Drescher Malecki to provide our opinion on. As an update, we do plan on providing an unmodified opinion, a clean opinion. As it stands, we don't anticipate strain from that clean opinion. Single audit, that references the federal compliance audit. There, the county is reporting just shy of $50 million of federal awards for the fiscal year ended 2020. And we go through the process and basically act as an extension of the federal government to perform what's called the single audit compliance audit over those awards and make sure that the county is administering this federal award money in an appropriate manner. So we follow their what's called uniform guidance, and we completed testing on four different programs and successful with no reportable finance. Just to update, we could say it, the Workforce Investment Act cluster, aging cluster, HEAP program, home, and Medicaid. So those were the four programs. Those were clean, and we worked with the Office of Employment and Training for Workforce Investment, Office of the Aging for the aging cluster, and DSS handled the last two. An auditor communications letter basically reiterates what our responsibilities were and some key communications. The next slide, actually, we'll look at a couple of those. A management letter you're familiar with, we'll cover at the end. And then a few other reports. There is another compliance audit that we perform, and that's over the State Department of Transportation awards. Just a little over $4 million this past year, but you're also subject to a compliance audit on that, in which we audit the CHIPS program. And that was clean, no reportable findings, good job. And then there are a couple agreed upon procedures for the jail commissary and resource recovery. Those we can distribute in draft form tomorrow. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the mental health and social services CFR cost reports, which mental health is done. Social services is underway. But moving on, the next slide, auditor communications. This group serving as the audit committee on the county. There are certain communications that each year, whether it was us or anybody else, these are required communications that they should make to the group on an annual basis. And the first is our responsibility under generally accepted auditing standards. And that is primarily our responsibility is to assess risk, design tests, perform tests, and ultimately gain reasonable assurance that the county's financial statements can be relied upon. And we validate that by stamping our approval that they can be relied upon with our audit opinion. A reminder, our audit is not designed to detect fraud. It is designed to gain assurance over the financial statement amounts, albeit we are aware and believe that if anything significant or material came up, we would likely uncover it during performance of our audit. Nothing came to our attention. Significant accounting policies and estimates. These are basically in the spirit of transparency so that this group is aware if any significant policies or estimates were to change that affect the financial statements, we would want this whole group to be aware of that so that you could read the financial statements knowing what policies and estimates went into play there. You know, if you were to change a policy or change an estimate, that may mislead a reader of a financial statement if you weren't aware of the change. The only significant change this year came as a result of the implementation of a new GASB. It's called GASB number 84. I'd say the short story, and Erica, you could probably back me up on this, is GASB 84, it took a lot of time and effort, but its effect on the financial statements was pretty minimal. And to the average reader of the financial statements, it's not very significant. So finance handled it well. We reviewed the treatment and we know that these financial statements are presented in accordance with the new requirements of GASB 84.
Can I ask a question, Carl, on GASB 84? We had inquired whether there was a work paper behind that that you guys had, and you didn't. We did obtain one from finance on leases, and it seemed like the language in the note on GASB 84 was referring back to leases that have been terminated, including family court, et cetera. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. And I did receive your documents today, the annual report. So I will go back and look and see, but family court building renovation was a long time ago.
Okay, just to clarify, leases as they relate to GASB 84 or in preparation of GASB 87?
I'm sorry, 87, you're right.
Okay, so that is in the future. Okay. That's not required for this financial statement. That's, I believe, now with GASB 95 issuing those postponements, I believe the county has until the year ended 2022 okay. to fully implement that.
Sorry about that, yep.
No, no problem. Independence, of course, this is pretty critical to serve as your external auditors. It wouldn't really be appropriate if myself or Erica, were related to or were close with any key decision makers or department heads that are related to the audit. So we can confirm, in fact and appearance, myself, everybody at the firm, there are no conflicts of interest between us and the County of Ulster and anybody that would have bearing over the performance of the audit. Other matters, full scope audit. We were given access to all records requested. So all good reports there. So moving on, were there any questions on the performance of the audit? This next section of the presentation starts to delve into a high level general fund review for the fiscal year. But if anybody had any questions on, the firm, the way we operate, or the steps in the audit, we could pause.
I mean, could you just go over the steps that you take in this audit? Is it actual hands-on audit? Do you do future projections? So, sure. Doesn't have to be involved, but yeah, thank you.
No, that's fine. So as a whole, I mentioned before, our job is to give an opinion on the financial statements. So we'll be looking at those key pages in the annual financial report. And then we say, well, it's our duty to say that those are fairly stated. So how do we get to that point? And the logistics of it, it has morphed over the past couple of years, whereas we're performing the majority of the audit in a remote fashion, whereas previously we were on site much more. We work most directly with finance. They're the ones who author the financial statements. So it does make the most sense that we'll have the most questions and follow up with them. But ultimately they keep track of the general ledger for the year that creates the financial statements. And then we're going to perform procedures to gain assurance on the amounts in there. So that involves assessing risk on the different areas of the audit. We look at each of the balance sheet items basically as separate transaction cycles. So cash is its own section. Receivables is its own section. Long-term liabilities has its own section, and so on and so forth. And we assess risk to each cycle. And based on that risk assessment and industry standards, we come up and design our testing so that at the end of our testing, we have that reasonable assurance that we feel comfortable saying this number is fairly stated. So we go through that process, and that's called field work. We pull samples and do detail testing. We do a lot of analytic testing in the government, municipal sector, specifically in funds that have adopted annual budgets. Measuring to the prior year is a great way of gaining assurance over if there was anything weird going on, because it would jump up or down from the prior year. In this sector, the prior year is a good measurement tool, and analytic testing is used quite a bit. And at the end of that, if there are any exceptions, you know, we follow up with the staff or department head that transaction cycle is handled by to address any concerns. But after that, we start reviewing the financial statements that we obtain from finance and say, are the numbers in these financial statements the same numbers that we tested in our audit? We want to make sure nothing changed. And after that, we're right here. We meet with the group, the decision makers, and make sure that everybody is comfortable with the process before those financial statements are ultimately issued and provided to the public. So how is that? That works? All right.
Wonderful.
All right, so moving on, the first few slides, they come right from the county's financial statements. And these should look familiar from prior year. The presentation is basically last year's information rolled forward with 2020 added. So what you're going to see here is the five-year trend of money coming in versus money going out. The red is going to represent your spending. So as such, you'll see if the red was above the blue, fund balance decreased because you spent more than you brought in. So it is that basic logic here. And what you see is that your blue line, 2016 was a little bit high, but from 17 on, a pretty steady, slow increase. And that is typical of county government. You also will, on a long term, see that same trend on the spending side, but spending has a little bit more volatility from year to year, it tends to be. So 2019 stuck out. As you can see, there was a large gap, and the county actually used just about $7.5 million of fund balance. In 2020, they've more than recouped the deficit that was spent last year, and revenues of just about $280 million exceeded spending of $268.7 million, so that your net change was $11.2 million. Your general fund balance increased because revenues were that much higher than expenditures. This is pretty indicative of a COVID year. What you saw was, you know, whether it be controlled and measured controlled spending, you know, a little bit more of a conservative measure on the spending side because of the uncertainty. And also people, you know, municipalities could have put in practice to freeze certain department budgets or ask that, hey, if you don't absolutely need that piece of equipment this year, we would ask that you defer it till a future year. So spending was controlled here. And also a big spend in the county, which we'll see in a later slide, relates to state mandated programs, you know, all your social services and everything. There was a decrease in overall activity of just about everything during COVID because people were home. Your revenues, thankfully, you know, last year at this time, we were a lot more concerned with where some of these revenue sources could go. They held on and still had their slight increase. So it was a favorable year in 2020. On the next slide, you take this line graph and we're going to consider those same amounts, total revenues and total expenditures, and put them into a ratio form. And the purpose for it is it kind of helps illustrate whether you increased fund balance or decreased fund balance. Anything over a perfect 1.00, fund balance increased. Anything under 1.00 is going to be a decrease to fund balance. So you see here, it actually is an up, down, up, down, up over the last 5 years. And that isn't such a bad thing. When you look at a five-year average, which that's something that management philosophy and budget monitoring is going to have a better impact over something like a five-year trend rather than 1 year, because there are some events that you can't control. Over the 5 year, your average is 1.002. That is awful close to a perfect 1.0. And I say perfect 1.0, if you think about government, its purpose is to provide services to its residents and raise enough money to do so. It's not to raise money to make a profit. And it's also not to provide so much services and be short on revenue that you create a deficit. So a perfect 1.0 means you're raising the dollar for every dollar that you spend. So a five-year average of 1.002 is definitely, you know, very close to that 1.0. So how does it tie to your fund balance or your equity position? On this slide, we have a bar graph and it's representing total fund balance at the end of the fiscal years for your general fund. And underneath the year number, you'll see that's your total fund balance amount. So for example, 2020 finished the year at $61,694,000. The classification or the breakdown is meant to focus on your unassigned fund balance, and that's your light blue portion there. I've said it before, but if someone is going to read the county's financial statements and retain one piece of information, it's likely going to be the unassigned fund balance in your general fund. It's the most common number that a reader of the financials will use to evaluate the county's health, to compare you to other counties. So this graph is meant to make that number stand out. All of the other classifications of fund balance, being non-spendable, restricted, and assigned, are grouped into the red category. Those are amounts that vary on how, you want to say, how liquid they are or how available they are for the county to spend. They have purposes attached to them, whereas unassigned is more of a savings account and can be used for whatever the general fund needs to use it. You'll see the big increase is in unassigned fund balance. It went up just about $13 million from last year. And on the other side is it was at the expense, or it's sort of reclassified from the red portion. You know, if you look at the red last year, $26.5 million, now it's down $4 million from there. The tax stabilization reserve was tapped into, you know, $1.4 million. The amount that was appropriated in the budget adoption went from 9.7 million down to 5.6. So those decreases essentially by default reclassify into your unassigned fund balance here. So on top of that, during the year, fund balance grew $11 million. So what you see is unassigned fund balance had a large improvement at the highest level it's been in the last 5 years. So the next slide starts the information that we pull from Office of the State Comptroller, Open Book New York, and it just puts it into this database that we maintain for all municipalities. And what it does is it enables us to pretty easily type in Ulster and then type in a few peers and see some of this data amongst your peers or compared to your peers. So the first couple slides are meant to just provide some detail to the total revenues and total expenditures that we saw on the line graph earlier. Your $280 million of revenues, this is how they're broken down. You can see the last 5 years of data, pretty consistent, no big swings from last year to this year. The next slide is going to show the other side, your spending. Spending, you can see the total bar. We mentioned a COVID year, there were some savings there, decreased spending of about $16 million, $17 million. And the lion's share of that is within economic assistance and opportunity, which is your largest portion. So in 2020 was $110.9 million. That's down $16 million from the last year. And that's tied to those state mandated programs, social services programs that I mentioned before. So that area was the main area that saw the decrease from last year. This next slide is just bringing up that ratio that I spoke about before, where your average is very, very close to 1.00. This is just setting it up in our software. You see the last 5 years. Again, for 2020, 1.04, because you did have such a favorable year with revenues over expenditures. And on the next slide, we take the last 3 years of that ratio and then put in a few other county peers. We'll give the qualifying statement that this information, there are no conclusions to draw from this, and certainly not as it relates to the audit. It is for informational use only. A lot of times it spurs some good conversation, or if anything, it's just something to sit back and digest. And it's interesting to see where Ulster compares to some of these other counties. We tried to put in, you know, it's both population, we try to mix population demographics and geographic location into what peers we select. But last year, I think we had Green instead of Putnam. Green actually doesn't have their 2020 information filed with the Office of the State Comptroller yet, so we substituted in Putnam. But this is something that if any of you are interested in other counties, or maybe some of the other information that I've shown compared to other counties, please reach out and let us know. And it wouldn't take too much, maybe not in September, but it wouldn't take much for us to substitute in some different peers or give a larger list instead of just five. But on this one, again, this is your revenues to expenditures ratio. You saw a significant growth from 19 to 20. There was growth in four out of the five counties presented. Dutchess was the only county presented who didn't have an increase in their ratio for this past year. The next slide, we take a look at the representation of your total revenues. So all the money that's being raised in the general fund and brought in, what percentage does your real property tax represent? And out of your total revenue, so we talked about something like $280 million, 17% is represented by real property tax. You can see compared to the other four counties, you are the lowest as far as the proportion of real property taxes. So now there's different observations you can make from this. My duty today was to bring it and provide it to you guys. So another the other large significant revenue that we're going to provide a similar comparison for is your net sales tax. So this is the number that is how much is retained by the county after you pass through to your local municipalities. So the sales tax here, Ulster's at 39%. This is pretty consistent with past years. And you also see the trend that from 5 years ago, which is the second set on the bottom of the slide here, you wanna see, you know, have we become more reliant, less reliant? Have sales tax gone up so much that it's taken over as a representation of total revenues? Just about every county here has experienced an increase in the representation of sales tax when compared to their total revenues. You know, that's a good thing. It's a sales tax. You have agreements in place so that you do receive that as revenue from the state. The tough part is it's out of your control. But lately, you know, this has been a favorable agreement to where it's returning some good numbers to the county and all New York State counties. Next up, and the last data point that we'll look at is your unassigned and assigned unappropriated. From the AUD, it takes certain assigned fund balance and adds it in with unassigned. So here's the last 5 years for Ulster County in their state report. And what you can see is this is that available fund balance that I was talking about, that if anybody's gonna take away one number from the financials, it will be your unassigned fund balance. There's a little bit of assigned in here, but you still see that sharp increase from 19 to 20. And that goes back to the red and blue bar graph where you saw the blue portion grow from 19 to 20. This is reflecting that same information. So when you move on and compare this amount of your unassigned available fund balance compared to a year's spending, 18 to 19, Ulster County had a tough year. You know, 19 total fund balance went down, unassigned fund balance certainly took a hit, went down to only 9.6% when compared to a total year spending. But in 2020, it's risen from that 9.6 up to 16.3%. And in past conversations, we've talked about how the GFOA has provided, you know, 2 months or 16.67% as a recommended minimum for this classification of fund balance. And, you know, the 16%, the county is much closer than they were in prior years. And when you're looking across your peers, Dutchess and Sullivan haven't quite gotten to that 16% if you're going to use that as a benchmark. But Rensselaer and Putnam certainly have adequate balances in their unassigned fund balance for their general fund. And if you want to pull that down, Amber, thank you. The last slide, just to point out, it does have our contact information if you guys don't have it readily available. But, you know, just to encourage, if anything comes up, I know we've worked with you, a few of you throughout the year on different areas, and we enjoy helping out. So please don't stop. The last item that we definitely want to accomplish on this call is to look through the draft management letter. I don't know how much in detail you guys would want to cover the prior year comments. The way that the county's asked us to put this communication together is to carry forward any comments that we've had in prior years that haven't been resolved. So what you'll see is an old comment, but then there's going to be a paragraph for each year that we have followed up in the audit to see what is the new status on this? Has any action been taken? So there are 5 prior year comments. I didn't know if anybody wants to speak up as to, do we want to go through one by one, or I could provide more of a summary and then just open it up if anybody had questions on any of the prior year ones. And then we could go through the newer ones in a little bit more detail since they're fresh.
I think a summary would be fine, then we can move on.
All right, thanks, John. So overall, there were five comments from prior years. One of them will always be carried forward to the next year, and that's because it's called the future reporting requirements, and that's alluding to what the comptroller brought up before, are those GASBs. They're always going to be coming out with new ones, so there will always be GASB comments in your management letter. So that's really just a roll forward and serves as, you know, an FYI for what GASB statements are coming up in the future years, not just necessarily next year. Two of the five had been resolved. The one was the coronavirus comment from last year, and that's really because it was more of a just a best practice from us. There wasn't necessarily a direct action that we expected the county to respond with. So that has been removed because there is no direct action to respond. The other one that was actually, you know, something to be changed was in the adoption assistance program. Last year, we noted that there was a checklist that could be used in all the applicants' binders or their files to help ensure that everything is being done and everything is maintained in their file. And this checklist wasn't being utilized in all of the files. So we followed up with the director there and they provide a response that they are using that throughout their department now. So that one's been resolved. Two of them will carry forward. The one relates to the different policies. It's called formalization of procedures. And there were five different policies or areas that we had mentioned. One that has been addressed during the year is a bank reconciliation policy that will be removed going forward. But there are still three areas that no new policies have been adopted or changed. And that is for revenue recognition, to which the finance department has their stance, and a couple IT policies related to disaster recovery and a risk assessment. Comptroller?
Yeah, I noticed, I think we raised this last year. It says that we don't have cybersecurity insurance, but we approve the invoices for that. So I know that we do.
I think that is, the comments are going to read exactly as they did when they were issued. And then it would require the reader to look through each of the responses for the year. And I believe we do state that cybersecurity insurance is purchased or in place. That might be in the next comment, the cybersecurity comment also.
Okay. All right. Again, you know, an hour to look at it, but
yeah.
The top of page 4 in cybersecurity, the second line from the bottom of that first paragraph, further, the county should consider purchasing cybersecurity insurance.
That's the comment from 2017.
Thank you. So, okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, we don't change the comments. They stay as they were issued. Okay. To look for if something had been addressed or changed, it does require the reader to read those follow-ups. And so at the end of the sentence, 2019.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. The last sentence of the 2019 follow-up has the confirmation that that.
All right, great. Thank you.
That insurance.
Yep. So, and then the other one was that cybersecurity policy. While insurance is taken care of, there is still no movement towards a formal cybersecurity policy that was recommended. So on the new comments, there are three comments this year.
Yes, Amber? It might be beneficial to add the statement to 2020 follow-up that says the county has continued the cybersecurity insurance noted in 2019 or something to that effect, to know that there's that portion of the comments still taken care of.
Got it. Yes.
Thank you.
All right. And then beginning on page 6 of the draft management letter are the current year comments. The first one is titled Schedule of Expenditures of Federal Awards Reporting. That single audit, federal compliance audit that we perform, It is based off of this CEFA, the Schedule of Expenditures, and the financial statements as a whole. The governmental funds are reported on a certain basis of accounting called the modified accrual basis of accounting. And there were a couple programs that were reported in the CEFA on a basis other than the modified accrual basis. They used the cash basis. We noted this during the audit, followed up with the department. I believe it was the Office of Employment and Training. And it's basically already addressed because that individual didn't know that it should be on this sort of accrual basis. So it needs to be recognized when a service is received rather than necessarily when a check goes out. So I would expect that next year's follow-up, this is already going to be resolved. Second one was something that, if you recall in the entrance meeting, Luke Malecki, another partner with us, he had mentioned looking into a remote work environment policy. And essentially, you know, as much as we're doing so much more remotely, even on the audit side, what about all the county employees? You know, what opportunities, what are they entitled to as far as working from home or working remotely? And what policies are in place to govern how all of that works? Who do they have to ask to get approval to work from home? What are they subject to as far as the equipment that they can use? There's a few different areas that you could look at, but it's becoming more and more significant. You know, if you have an individual who works from home, they don't come into work, and you call them and say, oh, I'm working from home today, would you be able to say that they are in the right or in the wrong per a county policy? So that's really what the idea of the comment is to get to a place where you feel comfortable with the structure that working from home is going to come with. And then the last one is just called new financial reporting standards. And that is the one that I mentioned is going to be there every year. This is a list of all GASB statements that have been issued and are going to be required for future implementation. So these are things that we can definitely serve as a resource going forward. We did serve as a resource with GASB 84 and finance and implementing that. So it's a four-year information up to GASB statement 97 at this point. But that's all of the material for today's meeting. I know it is a longer communication. I hope, you know, everybody benefits from us trying to get everything together in one meeting now before everything's issued, rather than having the management letter trail afterwards. I think this was, you know, a more efficient way to do it.
Amber, do you have anything you want to chat with, or the Right Honorable Controller?
No, thank you.
I have a quick question. If you have a county that you think has a good remote work policy, we'd love to see, you know, a county policy.
Okay, we can, we'll definitely follow up. It is a newer item that I don't know off the top of my head of one that I'd say, oh yeah, let me get you it, but we can look into it and I'll keep an eye out over the next month or two and forward something.
I think we've talked about revenue recognition every year. So just put it as a standing request. If you see a great revenue recognition policy, you know, we'd love to see it. We understand finance's position.
Yep.
Any of the committee members want to chime in, chat, ask a question, make a statement? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I do, John, if you can for a second. The management letter. So I'm confused. It sounds like, from my experience, you're combining an opinion letter and a management letter into one. My experience with management letters are that they are things that are actual deficiencies, not necessarily best practices. But it sounds like you're putting them both together into one. And anybody like myself, I hear all this and I'm thinking we've got a management letter with all these things on there. But in reality, some of them are just pointing out like future requirements. We're not deficient in those areas.
No, that's correct. And that's been our firm's approach on management letters pretty much universally. I understand what you're saying. I think a common reaction to hearing management letter is more so like a report card and what are our findings. We've tried to add in, we think this is the best forum to include things like best practices that we have, because while it might not be a deficiency, it could be an area of improvement to consider. There are alternatives. We don't have to put it together this way. In fact, the communication of this letter isn't even required. We have it in our contract, so we will provide one. But if there are no reportable findings, and those are the serious ones, you guys don't have any, we wouldn't need to produce a management letter at an audit. Oftentimes it is requested because groups, decision makers, boards are interested in areas of improvement, even if they don't have findings necessarily. So that's how we've treated it. I mean, if it was a concern of the group, we certainly could consider, you know, maybe having a separate communication and it's only best practices, and a management letter would only include what you're referring to more so as like control deficiencies.
Anyone? Marge?
Of course, I'm going to just keep grilling you. Sorry, I have questions. I unfortunately was not able to attend the prior meeting with Mr. Malecki, but I did review the minutes and listen to the audio, and it was very helpful to hear you guys talking about ARPA and the CARES money. I wanted to just confer that you maybe were aware that we have put all of the ARPA funds into capital projects, even though we do anticipate some operating expenditures out of them. I'm unable to find any other county that in New York that has treated the ARPA funds that way. And I'm wondering if you have any experience with any of your other clients who may have done that, or any thoughts with regard to that.
I'd say it's probably a separate conversation if we're going to get into the weeds. If you wanted to send me, if there's any good document that states dollar amounts and the purposes that they're being allocated to by Ulster, we can look at that and then kind of move forward. You know, there's many different purposes of the different capital projects and ins and outs. So if you wanted to start that conversation, you know, I could certainly take a look at it, and I'm sure Luke would be interested too.
Well, that's really in the hands of the legislature. So I'll confer with the chair to see if he's open to that. But yeah, we just want to make sure that we're doing it right. And obviously, you know, I think finance was having to make decisions prior to guidance from OSC at the beginning. And now we're looking at, I mean, I think the decision was made because it's easier for multi-year planning.
Understood. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Everything is still before final guidance because it's not out yet.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, we have been, I mean, that is getting into another service. We've been hired by a few other counties and municipalities to help on the compliance side. And we do kind of like a continuous auditing. So rather than on an annual basis, as transactions occur or as plans are put into place for ARPA, we can compare it to the available compliance guidance. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, that's something where we're putting contracts out there to work with people.
Okay, great.
All right, anyone else?
Just one more question about the private, you mentioned the cybersecurity before. Does that also extend to the health department? Are they also deficient as well? Or you didn't get that detailed?
Off the top of, I couldn't tell you an answer directly right now. I think our comment would be for countywide policy, but that's not to say that the health department has something in place themselves.
Okay. Just from a HIPAA standpoint, which is what my experience is, I'm just now concerned. When you said that, I just started thinking of Privacy Act and those requirements. And if we're deficient there, then we have multiple problems, potentially some very expensive ones.
That's an area that's not covered in our audit, so I don't want to speak outside our scope.
Fine. We can look into it internally.
Okay.
Anyone else? Amber, you have anything? Thank you to the firm Thanks for coming down and sharing this with us. If my memory serves me correct, the legislature next year will be looking for RFPs, because you're in your last year of our arrangement, aren't we?
Yeah, I believe we just got renewed to do the audit for the year ended December 31st, 2021. And that's the last option year on our current contract.
Right.
Yes.
So that's something that the next group can be going forward concerned with. Well, that's new business. Any old business? Anything else? It was very action-packed. I mean, yes, the Honorable Mr.
It's actually not for Drescher and Malecki, so if we want to finish up with them, I just have a piece of new business for the audit committee to discuss that they may or may not need to be here for. So,
well, you're welcome to go now. I mean, however you guys work it.
All right. All of you, thank you very much.
Thanks.
We'll be in touch. We're going to utilize Amber as the liaison to carry forward with issuing, but our goal is to get everything out by the September 30th deadline.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank
you. Thanks,
everyone. Bye-bye.
Hey, guys.
All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, you got it.
So one thing that we're tasked with, other than just, you know, the business we just dispensed with, is any other audits or agreed upon procedures that we may want to tackle. One thing that I've been concerned about for, I guess, probably the last, you know, what's it, you know, 18 months or so, is the county executive's project resilience. I really think that we should take a look into how that money was spent, where it was spent, not only where the money came from and where it was spent, but also county resources that were utilized, either staff hours or, you know, buildings and maintenance and things of that nature. You know, I'm not even saying that there was anything untoward or bad that happened with it, but I think it'd be a good exercise for the legislature to engage a firm to really do some work to delineate to us and the public, you know, where the money came from, where it went, and what county resources were used for it. And the way I would move forward on that, if I had my way, would be to have Amber draft up an RFP for an agreed upon procedures from an auditing firm or an accounting firm to be able to look through that information, of course, with the county executive's assistance and cooperation.
All right.
I just wanted to put that on the table for discussion, see if anybody else had a thought on it.
Legislator Laura Pettit.
Thank you. I'm also interested in, some of the new programs that we have coming up. And one in particular has been causing, quite a few phone calls to me. That's the review of properties that are on the auction block and what their selection process is. And, there was a statement that, first it was 5 properties that came off, and now they keep saying 4. That there was no interest, and I know at least 2 of them, and I have a feeling one of those is the one that came off, the interest list, had quite a bit of neighborhood interest, and the adjoining neighbors wanted to purchase them. So I if we're looking at audits and policies and what properties we really should be pulling that would benefit the public more, in other programs, I think, this would be one of them.
But where do we go? I mean, to Ken Ronk, Legislator Ronk's position, certainly the last year and a half has been a tumultuous year. There were some very successful programs to try to help sustain everybody. And that means I think a good review would probably be a good idea for a whole variety of reasons. Things seem to have worked well. And I don't think anybody has anything to be ashamed of, to hide. I think it was, quite frankly, successful. So I agree with you, Ken, on that. I don't know where to go with yours, Lord. I mean, we don't really, I don't know where our authority, I think it ends after today. You know, maybe that would be Ways and Means Committee, somebody, Laws and Rules. Any reviews are good reviews. And if folks have concerns, well, that's even more reason for a good review. Ken?
Just to continue on the point that I was making, and then I've got a comment to make on the point that Laura made. I agree that, you know, that a lot of things worked really well. I'll tell you one thing that concerns me is that during the discussion that the legislature just had on the communications specialist position, the person who on the day after session, just so everyone who isn't aware is aware, the day after session, the person that we all thought was going to be hired for the position was in fact hired for the position of communication specialist. And that was obviously, you know, as we all know, Hillary Harvey, who prior to that was in an accountant position in our previously adopted budget in the innovation team, or formerly ACE. Just after January 1st, that position was reclassified as a separate CSEA position without the legislature's knowledge and or, you know, weigh-in. And she kept being described to me by the county executive's office as the head of the Resilience Service Center, which is another, you know, semi-division of the county that the legislature was never made aware of, nor weighed in on, nor approved. So those are some of the things where, you know, I would be interested in the progression of Project Resilience. We've been using the word resilience a lot around Ulster County government lately, and it doesn't have a clearly defined role, and it doesn't have clearly defined staff, and it hasn't had any weigh in by the legislature. So I think that, you know, it would be a good exercise for this legislature to, you know, to execute a little bit of oversight on resilience countywide. And I think the first step towards that is finding out, you know, where the dollars came from, where they went, how we got here, and what county staff were involved.
What I'm hearing is two concerns, and there may be many other concerns out there. Sometimes you hear these concerns in bitch sessions, and other times you hear them in a good setting like this. Who would be the one, what's the narrative on how we could go forward? What is the mission statement of this committee? Quite frankly, what do? Have two meetings a year? Would they be the investigative committee for budgetary issues, finance issues? I mean, I think we need a little guidance with that. Look at, I won't be here, but I think your point is extremely well taken.
You will be for the next couple of months, Mr. Chairman.
That's about all, and that's going to go like a blink of an eye. I know real life, but your point is well taken. It's not necessarily adversarial. It's informative, yeah. And so I don't disagree with you at all.
So the legislature has a other fees for professional services line where we pay out the, you know, annual audit out of, and there's usually funds left in there. The legislature for the last couple of years has been appropriating some extra funds for things like this. We've done different, financial picture agreed upon procedures over the years out of that funding line. And it's been this committee in the past. I mean, I think that it started when I was the chairperson of the legislature, that this committee was tasked with finding out what we wanted to spend those funds on when it came to, you know, I don't want to use the word audits because we're not asking for an actual audit. But, you know, with these agreed upon procedures that we've done in the past on things like the law enforcement center and the sheriff's department, among others, you know, this committee has been the one, and Amber has done a fantastic job in both drafting the RFPs and working with the, accounting and auditing firms to make them happen. So that's why I'm bringing it up here. I think it is part of our charge, our task.
All right. I mean, the law enforcement review was so long ago, I you know, sometimes I forget what I had for breakfast. But I mean, if that's where it's coming from, I absolutely agree with you that they're just plain informative. We're not talking about adversarial things here. It's just good information. And I mean, the money for the audit firm we just hired or heard from comes out of the legislature budget.
Yeah, and you know, again, I think that I have a lot of small questions, but the one overarching issue that made me bring this up today is that there seems to be a lot that this legislature has not been made aware of by the administration about how Project Resilience and its subsets have worked. And quite frankly, what staff, you know, and without getting too deep down a rabbit hole, you know, that flows into the staff that were involved in the use of in the universal basic income pilot. Because every time I was asking the county executive's office about the UBI pilot and why the legislature wasn't involved in the decision-making there, I was told that the county doesn't have a role in it, that it's done by the University of Pennsylvania and the Novo Foundation or the Community Foundation or Project Resilience. You know, all these things are used interchangeably. And, you know, I did see 7 to 10 press releases go out talking about County Executive Pat Ryan's universal basic income pilot, which, you know, I can tell you, those press releases are written by county employees. So county funds were expended to publicize the project. So, you know, these are the things that I have an issue with when we're dealing with private, what are being told to us is all private funds, but the taxpayers are paying somebody to promote what's being done with the private funds. So it's not all sans taxpayer.
Marge.
I wanted to weigh in and just share what I know because, you know, while I'm not a voting member of this committee, I am a member and I have a unique background because I was the president and CEO of the Community Foundation. And I do feel like, and I agree with Legislator Ronk, there is a tremendous amount of information that is not public here and is not known by the legislature, which might change your opinions and decisions in certain matters. But I want to share with you what my understanding of the Project Resilience funding genesis, you know, where that money came from and where it went to the extent that it would be helpful. And I will be more than happy to work with any outside auditor or viewer that you request or hire. I don't think I'm appropriate because of my dual hats, you know, my previous role. When, I don't know if you recall, but County Executive Mike Hine made an announcement that he had secured $4 million for restorative justice. That funding was made as a grant from the Novo Foundation to the community foundations of the Hudson Valley for the purposes of restorative justice programming at Ulster County, in Ulster County. The grant was set up originally to not flow through the county, except for $1 million of that, which was for the Mid-Hudson Linear Park. The restorative justice funding was slated to flow directly to service vendors like BOCES, SUNY Ulster, and a smattering of other agencies that were supposed to be providing restorative justice programming ostensibly for raise the age youth in the 14 to 16, 18 category. What we saw over the very beginning of that program, while I was still at the foundation, was that we did not have a tremendous number of youth in that category. And that money was not, honestly, was not, you know, going out the door to those agencies in a substantial way. I do not know what conversations occurred between the county executive, Novo, and the community foundation once I was here with regard to that money. But my understanding is that that Project Resilience money is that same fund. And I do think that's an important thing to note because it was laid out to the public and to the legislature as if it was restorative justice funding. And maybe it makes sense to reposition money that isn't being used. I mean, that is something that has to be considered. Now, how that money flowed out, and I think this is important with regard to you guys hiring an outside auditor, because I'm not sure how you may need to get the consent of these other bodies. That grant went to United Way of Ulster County, mm-hmm. the Project Resilience grant money. There was definitely work being done, and our office was starting to ask questions at the very beginning of Project Resilience. Who's making the decisions? We were asking Amanda Laval, we were asking Evelyn Wright, because they were making decisions about certain restaurants being paid. And we were concerned that the county was weighing in on what restaurants would survive the pandemic by making resource allocations through Project Resilience that we didn't have a clear picture of. So I wanted to share with you that piece of it to say, you know, I come from that prior hat. I want to fully disclose that to everybody here on the record. I am more than happy to work with anyone that you retain for that purpose. And I will share gladly any information that I can on that matter. On the matter of the real property auction, I want to say that, as you know, our office called for the executive to abandon the plan to have an in-person auction. They did so, and they went online, and we were very pleased that that occurred. But we are interested in a number of aspects of the real property that the county holds, meaning the hazardous uncollectible list, how the auction is conducted, what properties are taken off for public purposes, such as affordable housing or other means, what are the criteria used, whether or not the legislature should be weighing in on that, as well as a number of other aspects, like what happens to properties that are redeemed in between. Are buyers required to meet certain standards in terms of them taking, say, for example, and making an affidavit under oath that they have no associated connection to the prior owner? So there are a number of pieces of that we are very interested in and may be able to accommodate some of the legislature's questions with a deeper dive without any sort of cloud or conflict of interest like the Project Resilience would have. So I wanted to just offer those two things and say that, you know, we'll look forward to following up with all of you on real property auction and being as helpful as we can and thinking about that going forward. Yeah, and I'm happy to answer any questions anyone has right now for me on either topic.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just for a second, two comments. So to Legislator Ronk, I agree we need to figure out where the money went, how it was distributed, who was involved. But I think an interim step would be for us to ask for that information first, see if we're getting it, and then evaluate it before we start bringing it. Because I just don't understand what an auditing company would actually get out of this if they're not going to get the information. So I think we should ask for it first, and then move from there, because we may get everything that we want out of it. I don't think that's true, but at least it's a good start. To answer the property question for Laura, I think you could speak with Legislator Bartels, but I think she's already been down this road. And the answer given was the properties were removed because there was direction from the legislature that we were going to be doing a land bank, and that this was to go towards that. Now, that was the answer given. It's not a good answer and it's not a legitimate answer, but that is the answer. The question would be then, what do we do about it? It was not done properly. It should not have been done. That's a decision for us to make, you know, later, but that is the answer that was given at least.
Laura, sorry for not using the prefix legislator. I apologize.
I think that the timeline is off on that, because this all came to light prior to any agreement to doing a land bank. And, you know, in fact, it was a constituent that called me up and said, hey, I was interested in the property next to the house I've been taking care of for 20 years. And all of a sudden it came off of the tax rolls. So to say now that it was taken off because we were going to have a land bank, which it was my understanding the county executive's office is not, or at least not at the time, you know, working with us to get this through. You know, this was actually a resolution that John and I put on a year and a half ago. So, I you know, and again, I think the biggest question is, where are the policies? You know, what is the procedure? And then what happens to these properties? And to go back and say, well, gee, you passed a resolution 2 years ago that said we should look at these properties to see if they have more of a public value than to just sell them again. You know, have they been, you know, taking properties off and adding it into the open space out at Mohonk? Do they need to come to us if the properties are under $50,000 in value? So there's just a lot of questions. And again, I think it is a great use of property on the auction block. You know, certainly, you know, some of them may have more of a benefit, you know, to open up a trail or to get right of ways. But it was the way it was handled, you know. So I'm looking at something in writing and something to clarify. And again, the timelines are off. I disagree that.
I guess we lost you, Laura. Ken, you're on. Laura, we lost the last part of your conversation. Okay. Well, don't run away. Ken, you're on.
Thank you. So we do, as part of, you know, authorizing the auction, give the Commissioner of Finance pretty broad authority to remove parcels. That may be what we want to look at as a legislature if we don't want to allow them to do that. But, you know, this isn't the first time that parcels have been removed. Parcels are removed every year, as the comptroller said, for, you know, environmental concerns. And again, we don't know if the properties that we take off are contaminated, but as good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars, you know, the county takes off potentially contaminated properties, because if we take it for tax foreclosure and it turns out there's a huge, you know, a huge oil or gas spill or some other kind of problem, you know, then the taxpayers are on the hook. We have a legal obligation to clean it up if we own the property and know about it. You know, we also routinely over the years have taken off properties to transfer to towns, other municipalities, not-for-profits for parkland and things of that nature. Again, if we should definitely maybe talk about a policy regarding, you know, what properties come off and how they come off. But I want to just make it clear. I don't think that the county executive's office or the finance department did anything untoward by doing this. They have the authority to, but maybe that's something that we need to address.
But this is a different program. I mean, this is
for a different purpose, but it's the same general.
And Laura, just to clarify, the what I was referring to about the land bank was the fact that Legislator Bartels had been talking about it and had draft legislation that she hadn't presented it yet, but it was in the works. That I'm just repeating what was said. I don't agree with it. I think it's not a good answer, but that is the answer that was given, is that they knew it was in the works and that's why they pulled it.
All right. Where do you want to go? Listen, as I said, I've only got a couple months left to do this, but it certainly seems to me that this committee potentially has a lot more responsibility in terms of the operation of the county government, just talking about the things that you brought up. But I don't want to get involved in spinning my wheels and I don't want to become political with this. I think that would be a mistake or even imply it. But by the same token, if we want to go down this road, and to some degree, you can just raise your hand and let me know. And I got to make sure Amber and Marge don't go hide on me, because I'm going to be a lot of stuff to get done. I agree with everything I've heard. I wouldn't know who to ask sometimes. Ken.
So on the project resilience issue, you know, Legislator Gavaris's point is well taken. I move that we authorize you, Mr. Chairman, through Amber, who's clerking it, to write a letter to the county executive asking for a detailed accounting of project resilience, including but not limited to monies that were spent, what it was spent on, and what county staff were involved in the program.
And I will second it. And also, if we could just add to that, any communications that were done and any advertising, marketing, whatever you want to call it, because I know they can play games with words here, any communication about the projects, that also should be included in theirs, and I'll second it.
I'll accept that as a friendly amendment to what I was saying, absolutely.
And I'd like to suggest that you folks put that in writing so that I don't have to remember it. And you all feel, Amber, go ahead, Amber.
I will take care discussion. Of that for you. That's,
I get it.
That's for me.
Does anyone feel that
for this being is- taped.
That's all right. I mean, I do think it's our jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Herbie, do you have any comments on it? I think there's been some legitimate questions raised.
No, I mean, I know that, you know, funds need to be reallocated and whatever, but it shouldn't be done behind closed doors. It should be during transparent. It should be out in the open. And I'm not seeing a lot of that. So I agree on and I vote yes on the motion.
All right, we'll move the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. And to the authors, we'll make sure you see a copy of it before we send it out, because it has to be worded correctly. So it's not coming off as adversarial or necessarily looking for a problem.
Yeah, we'll work together with Amber on that for sure.
March.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that Novo is having a series of community conversations that are Zooms of 12 people. I'm gonna be in the one that starts at 5 today. And I wanted to mention to you that I had already previously gone to Peter Buffett in December of 2020 and told him that their grant making is bigger than government and it's not transparent or democratic. And from where I sit, it doesn't work for me and my office. And so I plan to carry that message forward to these meetings.
Quite frankly, March, I don't disagree with you. I find it not necessarily completely inappropriate, but it sort of has a tinge of influence peddling there.
I'm thrilled to have generosity, but if they're grant making $200 million in a three-year period, that's $66 million a year. That is bigger than the city of Kingston or Poughkeepsie's budget. And
I been aware of it for a while. It's my feeling. All right. Any other business? I think I think I'm going to be wearing my welcome out before the year's over, but we'll get it on.
Move Mr. To Chairman, you just want to point out you have 2,376 hours left until the end of your term. You got plenty of time. There's plenty of time. That's a lot of hours. Well, 2,376 hours, a lot of time, Mr. Chairman.
Not to throw myself under the bus, but I'm going to have a glass of wine right now.
Therefore, I'll make a motion for adjournment.
I'm going to go to the track committee. So I'll trade. Yeah,
motion made and seconded. All in favor, aye. Opposed,
nay. Aye.
Thank you very much, everyone. It's really one of the more interesting ones over the years. Thank you very much.
Take care. You. See you soon.
Yep.